You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello everyone and welcome to this week's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast with me, Phil Kitramalides, and Sid Lowe, where we are ludicrously excited about how exciting the Spanish top flight is this season. We've got a real, real authentic title race with four teams in it, Sid. I said we're ludicrously excited. I'm going to be a bit of a party pooper here. I was thinking, is it a bit pathetic how excited we are that we've got a four-team title race, in so much as this never happens. I mean, we're never used to having this. This should be more normal than it is. It's not normal at all.
It should certainly be, maybe a little bit normal.
It hasn't been this tight
since 2006-07. No. That wasn't this tight.
No. It hasn't been this tight for 48 years.
In how are we measuring tightness?
The number of points
at this stage of the season.
At this stage of the season.
I like it. Okay, I didn't know
48
that.
48 years.
I didn't know that. I mean, certainly that I was thinking about the last time I remember. I wasn't looking at mathematically, which is obviously a good thing for me to do.
Good.
Never
don't
to look
do
at
that.
Mathematically. But I was looking at it in terms of the last time I can remember a title race where we were going into the last 6-7 games thinking, wow, there are three or four teams here. Mm. And obviously 2006-07 is the one because Sevilla could have won it that year. It was the one that Madrid won over Barcelona on head-to-head goal difference with that succession of completely bizarre, almost surreal scorelines. And so this is certainly the most exciting I can think of since then. I didn't know about the mathematics. That's great. So 48 years since we had something like this. Wow.
And what we have is Atletico Madrid top on 73 points. Real Madrid have 71 points. Barcelona have 71 points, but a game less. And Sevilla have 70 points. So four teams separated by 3 points. Barca do have a game in hand. They're at home to Granada on Thursday. If they win that, of course, they will go 1 point clear. Barca still have to host Atletico Madrid. Real Madrid still have to host Sevilla as well.
It's the same weekend, isn't it?
It's the same weekend. It's in 2 weeks. You definitely have to watch Spanish football that weekend. But this is what happened elsewhere on Matchday 32. Saturday saw Elche claim a massive victory in their bid to avoid relegation, because the relegation battle's really exciting as well this season. They beat Levante 1-0 at Valladolid, and Cadiz played out a 1-1 draw. Alaves conceded very, very late on for Valencia to salvage a point at home to Alaves. Yes, Valencia won, Alaves won. Had they lost, Valencia would have been in potentially all sorts of trouble.
Yeah.
Real Madrid drew 0-0 at home to Real Betis. It's the fourth consecutive season that Betis have kept a clean sheet away
to
Real Madrid. First team ever to do that. It's an incredible stat. And it's incredible that Betis are the team to have done it as well. Not necessarily a team noted for their resolute defensive solidity. Sunday was a huge game at the bottom of the table, which saw Getafe triumph 2-0 at Huesca. Both goals from Enes Unal. Then a really, really good game at the Estadio de la Cerámica, which you were at, Sydney. You saw Barcelona beat Villarreal by 2-1. A man of the match performance from Antoine Griezmann. Celta beat Osasuna by 2-1. Man of the match performance from Barry Aspas. And Sevilla beat Granada by 2-1. Sevilla's form since being knocked out of the Champions League by Dortmund, I think on the 9th of March, 7 wins and 1 draw. Extraordinary. And that one draw, by the way, was that last minute goal from the goalkeeper, Bono, at Valladolid.
Oh, so it was.
And then
I'd written about that run today and not join the dots together. That's true, yeah.
And then
it starts with them being beaten by Barcelona and then Elche.
Yes.
So at that point against Barcelona, we thought they'd lost their chance of being the title race.
Yeah,
and now they've kind of burnt it back again.
And then the Sunday night game was a really exciting spectacle at San Mamés, which saw Athletic Club beat Atletico by 2-1. A late thumping header from Inigo Martinez, giving Athletic Club all 3 points. Monday, we've got Eibar against La Real. It's a provincial derby. And if Eibar lose that, they're all but mathematically down. But anyway, this is what we call a title race, Sydney.
It is.
Shall we start with the game you were at?
Okay.
Yeah. Let's start where you were. You were at the Stadio della Ceramica on Sunday afternoon to see Barcelona win fairly. They were rightful winners of this game.
Yeah, I think so. I think they were the better team. That's not to say that it was entirely one-sided at all, but I thought they were the better side. The first half was really, really enjoyable.
Oh, yeah.
I think the second half less so, in that it felt like Barcelona could kind of control the game at that point rather than necessarily try and go and play it. But the first half was a lot of fun. It was pretty open. You had the first 2 goals within a minute of each other, both brilliant goals. Samu takes his really, really well. Griezmann then scores.
I mean, that pass from Pau Torres.
One of the things that's nice about Villarreal is the shape of the stadium is very square and it's very close to the pitch,
right,
even when you're high up. And the press area it sort of overhangs the rest of it.
Yeah.
So in other words,
I've never been.
Unless you lean forward, you actually can't see the touchline. That's how close you are. So the players who are playing directly below you get a really fascinating view of how good they are. And in the first half, I had Pau Torres at my side, and of course he's the left-footed of the two centre-backs, so right on my side as well. He's very, very nice indeed on the ball. I mean, we know this, and I know it's not new, but it was really striking watching the way that he reads space, how comfortable he seemed to be every time he was put under pressure, because he would come out of the pressure really well. And as you say, produced a really lovely pass for the goal.
I don't think it's a wild stretch to suggest that of the four title contenders, Barca are not only favourites, but they're the side that are playing the best right now.
Yeah, well, and I think those two things go together. Yes. I think one of the reasons why they're favourites is you look at Barcelona's title run-in and you look at them and you think, I can see them winning all of these games.
Mm-hmm.
You look at Atletico Madrid and forget the fact that one of them's against Barcelona. Just look at them and you don't think they're going to win every game now. You look at Real Madrid and I think you can see that they could, but you're not entirely convinced that they will. And with Sevilla, I think you probably look at them and think, yeah, they could, but will they win the really big game? The one against Real Madrid. And I suppose that is, if you like, the crux of this question now. And obviously, look, I think we are in a position where anything can happen. I think we're in a position where I felt, I must admit, that had Atletico won last night, that might have been it for Real Madrid. Just because it would have been 5 points.
Mm.
And 5 points with only 15 left in play. And I would have thought that was a big gap. It's no longer that big a gap. And of course, they now know that while Atletico and Barcelona both have their fates in their own hands, they both know that if they win every game, they win the league. They've got to play each other.
Mm.
And Madrid will know that at least one of them drops points in that game. Potentially, of course, both.
I mean, emotionally, it was a massive blow for Atletico last
night. Huge. And actually, Simeone implied this very heavily after the game. He had already said that the psychology of the league was likely to be the key thing.
Mm.
He said after the game, I think the team that's mentally strongest will win this league. And he wasn't quite directly asked, is that you? But he was asked about the mental strength of his team. And he said something along the lines of, we will see this in the next game.
Mm.
He didn't say, we're strong, this won't hurt us. Mm. He seemed to be implying that he thought it would. There are lots of other flaws to Atletico Madrid. I don't think it is just about mental strength. I don't think, honestly don't think, even when you watch them, that we're watching a team bottle the league. I think we're seeing a team that has its limitations and that those limitations are being exposed when they possibly weren't earlier in the season. We're not seeing them getting slaughtered by anyone. We're not really seeing them shooting themselves in the foot, although you could argue that conceding a goal late, having got back into it, yes, they was, but it's still a thunderous header from a corner. That, you know, that can happen. I think the difficult thing in terms of judging Atletico yesterday is actually how poorly they went into the game, because the first half an hour was really bad. Really, really bad.
And Diego Simeone, after the game, was asked, you know, why did your side perform so poorly in the first half? He said, well, that's our fault as the coaches. We didn't prepare the team for the game how we should have.
Yeah, I think he's trying to say that, of course, in part to take the pressure off the players, in part to justify it. I imagine that, what do you call it in English? from doors to the inside. De puertas para dentro. What do you call that in English? On the inside, I suppose. Behind closed doors. Yeah, right. Behind closed doors is the phrase. I knew there was a proper phrase. Behind closed doors, I suspect he's
saying. If you're a new listener, by the way, this does happen regularly. We sometimes forget how to speak English.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, we do. I, last night, as you know, because I was saying this as I was watching this on the train coming back, and messaging you as I was getting into the car driving home last night, having just seen the end of this game. I am not normally, as most of our listeners will know, someone who attacks managers or criticises managers.
No.
Because fundamentally, I am very well aware that they know an awful lot more than me.
Mm-hmm.
And even when there are decisions that I don't fully understand, there's a bit of me that thinks, well, okay. But I thought yesterday we saw something from Simeone that I think we've seen too often. And I don't know what the reason for it is. And I wonder if it is because he's sort of reaching now for a solution that maybe he doesn't see. But yesterday he made three changes very early in the second half. And those changes, by the way, were entirely natural because, frankly, Lemar, João Félix and Luis Suárez, you want them on the pitch, particularly when you're chasing a lead. But the thing, from my point of view, and it's something I think we've seen a lot in the last 6 or 7 weeks, and I must confess I haven't had the time to go back and actually go through all of the changes, and I feel like I should try and do so, is that I felt like, again, we had mass changes that changed not just the personnel, but the structure, that changed the approach, and that then would change back again. We've seen lots of games with Atletico this year where he'll change a structure, and then 10 minutes later, make another change that either changes it back or changes it to something else.
But what again. Is that? Is that him panicking?
Well, that's why I say I feel like this is because he's reaching for something. He's reaching for a solution that isn't there, that for whatever reason he can't see. Now, I don't want to, again, because, you know, the analysis is his and the players are his and he understands this a million times better than me. But I don't know about you, but if you watch yesterday's game, Atletico Madrid, and this is a far too simplistic conclusion, but I'm going to stick with it just to try and make this point. Atletico Madrid were playing well. They had created four reasonably good chances in the first 10 minutes of the second half. And there's a bit of me that sometimes thinks, just leave them on. Don't change it. Now, as I say, he sent on three players that I want on the pitch. So in that sense, I'm not complaining. I want those three players on the pitch. It's absolutely right. Get them on. But I felt that the three onto the pitch, the removal of the right back and the putting of Marco Llorente to right back, the shift in the structure. And afterwards, Simeone said, you know, we played better in the second half. And I think that's right, they did. But I actually think they played better in the part of the second half before they made the changes, not afterwards. And I was also a little bit disappointed. I hate to say this because it's not it's not my job to attack the media, as it were. To hear the analysis on the television last night on Spanish TV, basically saying, "Oh, they were so much better in the second half," and, you know, Lamar came on and made a difference, and they were, and all of those things are broadly true in that Lamar came on and I thought did play quite well until he started in the middle and then was pushed out to the wing. But there was a bit of a thought, hang on, can we not see the basic maths here? And I should never say, should we see the maths? Look at the number of chances in the second half and when they came. And they came before the changes. And I think this is happening a bit. And I think it's, as you say, it's, I don't know if panic is the right word, but it's reaching for something that's sort of not there. And I think it's symptomatic rather than a cause, but I think it might actually be making the symptoms worse at times.
Okay. Today's pod is a little bit less structured in so much as we're sort of mixing.
Well, because all these games are kind of interwoven, aren't they?
Yeah,
I mean, by definition.
I do sort of want to go back to the Barca game.
Of course.
And ask you about Antoine Griezmann, who did put in a man of the match performance, lovely goals, and he seems to be relatively happy playing where he's playing.
Did you notice what he said after the game? I thought it was very interesting, and to say it so publicly, he said it's not my natural position, and he wasn't asked. He wasn't asked how he felt about playing for the middle. He said, this isn't my position, but, you know, I'll help the team out. I'm not entirely sure that it's not his natural position, which is to be one of two strikers, to not exactly be a number nine, but sort of be a number nine with a certain degree of freedom, slightly to the left of centre, with Messi slightly to the right of centre. I think it obviously is true that over the years we've seen him more as a right-sided player who's kind of drifted across, which of course we know is Messi's position. We've seen him play as one of two strikers with a more fixed striker alongside him. In his early days at Real Sociedad, we even saw him on the left, which they've tried at Barcelona and it hasn't always worked, although there have been moments when it's looked okay. But I thought it was interesting that he raised that. I actually think this position can work for him. I think, as we've said about him lots and lots of times, even when we're not sure about his performances, his work rate is extraordinary for a forward. And maybe that's a product of having worked with Diego Simeone for many years.
Yes.
He's not lightning quick. He's not slow, but he's not lightning quick. He's not like Dembélé, for example. But I thought he played very well yesterday. I mean, obviously, look, there's the finish on the first goal. There's the gift for the second, and it's an all right finish. There's nothing special about it. But it's more that he's prepared to do the movement that opens spaces for others. Although, if it's purely about movement, as we've said before, Dembélé gives you that as well because he stretches the team. The problem is Dembélé misses chances, which actually, in fairness, Griezmann doesn't for the most part.
No?
He doesn't miss the sitters that Dembélé misses, I don't think.
Maybe not.
I think he misses chances, but not sitters. Remember we had that period, didn't we, when we said, is he the almost... It was Griezmann, wasn't it, when we were talking about, is he the best almost scorer of goals in Spain?
It wasn't Griezmann.
Who was it? Someone who kept...
Luke de Jong.
Oh, you're right, it was Luke de Jong, yes. Yeah. I don't know why I thought that was Griezmann.
Yeah.
Yes, you're right, it was Luke de Jong.
Okay, just how tired are Real Madrid, Sid?
I don't know. I think the answer is probably pretty tired. I also think there are two different elements. There is tiredness and awareness of tiredness, right? And by which I mean, I think that there is the inescapable fact that there is tiredness in the team. But I also think there's the fact that because they're aware of that, because they've got Champions League, there is an attempt, even if only at a subconscious level, to try and conserve energy. I heard someone on the radio mention this, and I thought it was quite a nice way of putting it. It's like they've got 20% on their mobile and they're shutting down the things they don't need to use.
Yeah.
And there is, I think, a small element of truth in that. And of course, this comes from the fact that a couple of weeks ago, Zidane said they're at the limit. Now, of course, he knows that. He'll have seen the statistics. Sports science is very advanced. They will know, they will be able to see the power outputs and all of these kind of tangible measurements. But I just wonder if maybe when you make that, if you like, a kind of a public a statement of public fact, I wonder if it just influences a little bit the way that teams play, that they go into games thinking, all right, let's try and get through this without absolutely going full pelt. That said, and we've said this a few times this season when Real Madrid have dropped points, in particular when they drop points drawing rather than being overrun by teams, that there's sometimes a lack of imagination as well. It's not just, I mean, except for Benzema, there is sometimes a lack of imagination when the onus is on them to attack.
Eden Hazard could help with that.
Well, he could, because he's a fabulously talented player. He has been, as we've said before, largely an irrelevance throughout his Real Madrid career. He came on at the weekend, he played, 10, 15 minutes, had that one good run I thought he should have shot rather than paying it off. But people are grasping for that. Now, who knows? Maybe he has got a big role to play. Maybe he can have an impact. Forgive me for being pessimistic about it, because of course we've watched 2 years, as I say, of him being irrelevant, and it's not necessarily his fault, although there are questions I think about application and so on. I think it's fundamentally just really horribly bad luck with injuries.
How convinced are you that Real Madrid are going to win the Champions League? Now I ask that because maybe it's a little in joke of ours, but Sid always seems convinced that Real Madrid are going to do something in Europe, even when they're not playing well at all. And I guess that stems from you being here and seeing them.
I'm watching it happen time and time again.
Finish sixth in La Liga and win the Champions League.
I think that they are favourites against Chelsea, but I say this as someone who's not going to claim to be an expert on Chelsea, although I've now watched them 3 times, all of them in the Pizjuan in the Champions League this year. I didn't think they were that great in the two Porto games, although I did look at them and think this is a very well organised team. It's a very tough team. I think it's a fairly one dimensional team, to be honest with you. But I think if they're not put in a position where they have to chase goals, then they have a chance, of course. But I think Real Madrid are favourites. I think the quality of players that Real Madrid have, despite the exhaustion, despite the fact that we've spent a lot of this season saying they're actually not very good. I mean, it's remarkable, really, because they are very, very good. And at the same time, we're sort of not always sure that they really are. But then they won 3 Champions Leagues in a row. Not always like that, but a lot of the time like that. I also feel, and it's no more than that kind of sort of mystical Real Madrid thing, that if they get to the final, they win it. I mean, they could be up against the combined might of every great football team that's ever existed, and they would still find a way to win that final, just because it's Real Madrid and it's the Champions League, and it's just kind of what happens.
Lads, it's Real Madrid. That game is tomorrow, and then we're looking forward also to PSG against Man City on Wednesday. By the way, if I haven't mentioned already, come and join us at patreon.com/TSFP. We've got daily Spanish football content for you there, including a Q&A pod every Tuesday, a bonus pod every Thursday, and our series TSFP Presents. This week we're doing Sliding Doors, and we're talking about the key moments in Spanish football and asking, what would have happened if something different happened. So come and join us, patreon.com/TSFP. On a scale of 1 to, oh my days, how unbelievable would it be if Sevilla won the La Liga title? Would it be the biggest thing that's ever happened to you while you've been in Spain? Wow. Well, that's ever happened. Not necessarily to you, because yeah. quite a lot of things have happened. But
could well be.
It might be. Might
I
be.
Mean, in terms of the symbolism, possibly Depo winning the Copa del Rey against Real Madrid.
But that's just
exactly that's the point. In terms of the symbolism, I think it would be huge. I think it would be even more kind of symbolic because, you know, we've just had the week of the European Super League fiasco in which Sevilla were the one team of the four in the Champions League, in the league title race, who of course weren't invited. I think it'd be brilliant. I mean, I must admit, I mean, forgive me if you're a Barca fan or a Madrid fan or an Atletico Madrid fan. I think it'd be brilliant if Sevilla won the league.
What on earth happened at the end of their game against Granada?
It was amazing. I mean, it was amazing. Fundamentally, it sort of doesn't matter. But of course, life is full of things that don't matter. And as
Sid,
I always
Sid, nothing matters.
Exactly. Yeah. Nothing really matters. Yeah. Absolutely right. Yeah. In the end, as a mate of mine always puts it, life is just about gathering pub stories, isn't it?
Yeah.
And this is a pub story. There's no doubt about it. On the weekend, by the way, in which a dog ran on the pitch, which is basically the best thing that can happen in football. This was also unique, and the players themselves said it. The referee said 4 minutes to go. On 3 minutes to go, in other words, 93 minutes, additional time, he blew the whistle. Now, the players went to him. They surrounded him. They couldn't understand why this had happened. By the way, they didn't know for sure because, as I've said lots of times, and I think it's one of the most stupid things in the game, stadium clocks stop at 90 minutes. What? Because we can't trust fans and footballers to know how much time is actually being played. When this weekend actually proved the person you can't trust to know how much time is being played is the referee. So this time he stops the game a minute early. There's a lovely bit post game where Victor Díaz says, "Well, we could see from the fourth official's face, which was desencajado, which I love that phrase, like out of its box, sort of awkward." I just love the idea that, you know, the pieces were in the wrong place. He said his face was desencajado, so we could see that something was wrong, and it didn't feel like 4 minutes. It was a minute too little that he gave. The referee's pointing at his watch, going, No, look, time's up, look, time's up. The fourth official is there, kind of half lifting his hand as if to say, boss, you've got this wrong. Eventually, the referee realises this and says, oh, OK, well, we'll play this extra minute then. But some of the players have already gone. My favourite bit of footage of this is Luis Suarez and Fernando, who have swapped shirts. They have to swap shirts back again to go back out and play. And then you get this image, which is like the classic image of any Sunday league game ever.
Acuña.
21 players on the pitch waiting for the one guy who's turned up late, Acuña, sitting on the touchline, barefooted, pulling on his socks, shin pads and boots. Because, of course, he'd got to the dressing room and taken his socks and his boots and his shin pads off. They took an extra 8.5 minutes to get all this done. Eventually nothing happens in the 1 minute, so in a way it's just anecdotal, but as I say, pub story. And it was just this kind of thing, we'd never ever seen this before. For Lopetegui it was a big deal because they had got through the tension of a late Granada goal, the chance maybe that they wouldn't win, and then suddenly they're saying to him, I don't know, there's another minute. And Lopetegui was there's a bit where he's saying, well, we restart with our ball, it's our ball, we had the ball, and he's really determined, rightly so by the way, to make sure that they get the ball back. The referee made a real balls up of it. I don't fully understand why the referee didn't just say, well, tough luck. But, I mean, in a way, it's good that he said, OK, we'll play this extra minute.
Is it?
In a way, it is. But I'm nothing happened bad that was bad. There's a bit of me that thinks, had there been fans in the stadium, this is potentially quite dangerous. Because fans start leaving, they realise the game's been going to carry on playing, and they turn and come back again. That was essentially, that movement of people was the cause of the raging of the stadium disaster. Now, I'm not saying this would have reached that level, but it's genuinely quite, potentially quite dangerous. And then, did you hear the referee's excuse?
No.
Right, I'm not good at maths, as everybody knows.
Yes.
But this doesn't make any sense. The referee said, my watch stopped.
Right.
Explain that to me. If your watch stops, why would you play a minute less? Surely you'd be playing a minute more because you would not realise you'd got to the end yet. It doesn't make sense. It's the wrong way round, isn't it?
Yes, yeah.
It's the wrong way round. Yeah, my watch stopped. So what, it stopped on 93?
Yeah.
So why weren't you still playing? It's complete opposite.
Unless, so what really happened then?
I suspect
What's
that
he
what
hiding,
happened
the Burgos Bengoechea?
I suspect that what happened is he just had a kind of a brain freeze, head fart moment in which he said 4 minutes, they put 4 minutes up. He got into his mind that it was three for whatever reason and just went 93, beep.
Yeah.
And then everyone goes bonkers, and sort of at some point the penny drops and he goes, oh, okay.
Oh, my watch stopped.
Well, he's showing them his watch. He's going around showing the players his watch, which I assume means that he stopped it rather than it stopped on 93.
Yeah.
But that still doesn't give you the answer because you'd said 94 over at the touchline. Anyway, it was all a bit silly. No real harm done, although you know, it does make them, it does make everyone look a bit stupid, to be honest. Although mostly the players found it funny, I think.
Well, they found it funny because nothing happened.
Because nothing happened. Yeah. I mean, imagine if it had. And Koundé's tweet, did you see his tweet?
Yeah.
If you like, we'll replay the whole game.
Yeah, he'd gone into the dressing room as
he'd
well.
He'd gone into the dressing room, yeah. As I say, my favourite bit was the two players who swapped shirts and had to swap them back again. Oh, here you go.
There we go. Little pub story coming out of Sevilla and Granada. A quick look at the Segunda División before we leave. Espanyol are going up. They beat Las Palmas 4-0 and they're 6 points clear of second place Mallorca, who play tonight. Almeria drop points with a 1-1 draw at Mirandés. Leganés are fourth. They beat Alcorcón. Oviedo were beaten 1-0 at home by Girona. A goal scored by former Oviedo winger Joel Barthenas.
Every time. Yeah. Well, I mean, I know every fan feels like this is the case, but I really do think Oviedo have a very, very high proportion of ex-footballers destroying us.
Rayo are playing Albacete tonight in the Roman Sosulia derby.
Oh.
In Vallecas, which should be interesting.
Well, there'll be no fans there to chant. Here's a question.
Not inside
for you.
The stadium.
If those fans climb up the wall at the back and chant against him, can the game be called off for fans who are not in the stadium chanting "You're a Nazi" at Sosulia?
I don't know, mate. Let's see. Anything's possible in Vallecas. This week, you've got Real Madrid against Chelsea on Tuesday, Villarreal Arsenal on Thursday, plus Athletic against Valladolid and Barca against Granada in La Liga. We'll have a Q&A pod out tomorrow, a bonus pod out later this week, and a new episode of TSFP Presents Sliding Doors 2. La Liga is fantastic this season. We're very much enjoying it. I hope you're enjoying it as well. And if you're not a patron, don't worry. We'll be back next week, as ever, sitting in a Peugeot this
today,
week, talking about Spanish football. Adios.
Cheerio.